You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hi, and welcome to our weekly podcast. I'm Sarah Perks, the Programme and Engagement Director. I'm back from Berlin and in the homeland or Heimat of Corner House. Coming up in this edition, Viva, our Spanish and Latin American film festival, starts next week. We hear about the events not to miss and some of the screenings to watch out for. The Consulate of Corner House is in full swing at the Triangle. We hear from the brave Corner House staff, and that includes me, who got their faces cast as part of the Archipelago project. Animal Kingdom begins screening here tomorrow. I'm joined by our programme administrator, Rachel Salt, and Andy Willis from the University of Salford to discuss this dramatic new Australian feature. And that super package is rounded off by our What's On guide and the staff recommendation of the week. So let's start things off with our film focus. And this week, it's Animal Kingdom. So I'm going to start with you, Rachel. Tell us a little bit about Animal Kingdom and the synopsis.
Okay, so Animal Kingdom is a striking Australian thriller, and it's about a young guy called Jay, whose mum dies from a drug overdose, not the most cheery of subjects, and he has to go and live with his grandma, who he's kind of estranged from, and gets involved with her three sons, who are all getting in trouble with the police. They're all involved in drug trafficking and all sorts of trouble, and fun ensues. I don't really want to give too much away, but yeah, that's basically what happens.
And do you know a bit about the director?
I don't know too much about him because apparently this is his debut feature, although The Guardian didn't stop in calling him an auteur, even though this is debut feature release. So no, I don't really know much about him, but apparently he's already been picked up off the back of this release by Hollywood, so hopefully we'll be seeing more from him soon.
And this is very much in the gangster genre, but it's gangsters in Melbourne in Australia. Andy, what do you know about this?
Well, of course, we normally think of Melbourne being associated with Neighbours and leafy suburbs, but there's been a recent stream of kind of gangster-related crime dramas coming out of Australia, particularly focusing on Melbourne. The most well-known one is probably Chopper, the film that broke Eric Bana. Chopper Reid was a criminal who was based in the Melbourne area. And that city has got one heck of a reputation when you actually look into it when it comes to crime. Recently, there was a very well-received TV series called Underbelly, which was on, it was on the TV in this country, but it's been released on DVD. And Underbelly told the story of the infamous gangland wars that took place in the 1990s and early 2000s between the Carlton crew, an infamous gang, and their rival, Carl Williams. I've seen that series and it's pretty impressive. I did expect Animal Kingdom to be a little bit like it, but I was pleasantly surprised that it wasn't just retreading the same sort of territory. And of course, for those of you who are old enough, of course, that's not either Sarah or Rachel. I will, of course, draw everyone's attention to one of the greatest Australian TV series ever, Bluey, starring the legendary Lucky Grills. As it used to say, thrills and spills with Lucky Grills as Bluey Hills, which was a legendary TV series in the 1980s on Late Night Granada. So much so that Lucky Grills, the star of the programme, was brought over to the Montrose Club in Liverpool by local DJ Billy Butler. And he was a well-known comedian in Australia, and he played there a number of nights. So let us know if you do remember Bluey from Late Night Granada, another legend of the Melbourne crime scene.
Okay, me and Rachel are very bemused and we've never heard of Bluey. Rachel, what did you think of the film then? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's not at all what I was expecting, and there's some really strong performances, a lot from newcomers, but as well from Jackie Weaver, the lady who plays the grandmother. She's been nominated for an Oscar. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like she's going to get it. She'll probably lose out to Helena Bonham Carter. But yeah, it's a really good sort of window on the underworld of Melbourne, like Andy was saying, and sort of reveals a lot of stuff about the crime scene and everything that you probably don't know because we just trust what we see in Neighbours and Home and Away. But yeah, it's had a lot of critical acclaim and I think it's all well deserved, really.
And Andy, do you agree? How did you find the film?
What was most striking for me about the film was how, now I don't say this is a negative thing, but how small the film was. It was very much a domestic drama about a family unravelling and the kind of dark tensions that were within that family. And the central performance, I think, by the grandmother is really good, and she plays those changes very, very nicely, I thought. As I say, it wasn't what I expected, but I was pleasantly surprised by a very intense drama, which worked, I thought, on a number of levels. There's no heist, there's no hold-up. Reminded me a little bit of the old westerns where You know, the Cowboys, you can tell they're feeling that their time has come and gone and they're not really sure where they're going to fit into this newer society. And there was really that sense that these guys had had their time. And what was quite striking was how actually brutal the police were in the film. And looking into some of the real events that went on in the 90s and early 2000s in Melbourne, it seems that that's a pretty good reflection of how nasty the police were at that time.
Is it a true story, Rachel? I think you were researching this.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but it's actually based on a really controversial story that happened in the 80s, late 80s in Australia, where a family were prosecuted as being criminals, like organised crime and everything. So it's loosely based on that. I've heard that the director said that he doesn't want too much to be drawn on that. I've heard a lot of people likening it to Scorsese, like Total Film and Guardian, but I have to say that I think it's a lot more pared down than that, and it's not as, you know, The Departed, it's not nowhere near like that. It's not as Hollywood, it's a lot more art house, but not too much. And I think it's really accessible for anybody looking to watch something new this weekend.
I agree. I think it's maybe an unfair comparison to, say, Scorsese. I think it's much more understated. It's almost like an art house gangster film, if that's a genre. Andy's probably got several examples of that as a genre. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought the pace worked really well. The performances are amazing. I was really intrigued by the central character of Jay, who's the young boy, again played by a newcomer, and how he's very tormented, but again gives a very understated and complicated performance. Also, Guy Pearce is in this film, and I was kind of thinking about Guy Pearce's career and feeling a little bit like I've grown up with him. So if you're my age, you watched him as Mike in Neighbours, and then it was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, LA Confidential, Memento, and then he went quiet for a bit, struggling with his demons as artists do. And then coming back recently in films like The King's Speech and lots of cameos in films like The Hurt Locker and lots of other things. And I think he's really matured as an actor. I mean, he's only got a small part in this, but again, it's sort of a great performance by Guy Pearce. And I also think he's ready for that meaty role that will probably bag him an Oscar or much, much more acclaim. So I think, you know, it's great for him that he's in it, and I'm sure we'll see more from him coming up. Rachel, who would like this film? Who should come?
I think it's hard to say. Obviously, people who are interested in Australian cinema, but I'd say as well, anybody who's interested in European cinema or just worldwide cinema on a whole, because it's not necessarily art house. Like, I know it's art house, but I would say that it's got a broad appeal. Even if you think, well, I like Scorsese films and I'm wondering why they're likening to it a lot of journalists, I'd definitely say check it out. It's not one for the faint-hearted. If you don't like sort of gruesome storylines or if you're easily scared, then don't see it. But yeah, I would say it's got a mass appeal. And yeah, if you want to see one of the smaller films that's nominated for an Oscar this weekend, then definitely check this one out.
Great. And Andy, your final thoughts on Animal Kingdom?
I mean, I think it is a kind of very small and intense film, and I think that shouldn't put people off. I do think it's one that bears comparison, as Rachel said, to maybe, you know, some of the recent European crime films. It's got a really nice feel to it, I thought, and I would recommend it definitely to anyone. It's not that gruesome. Yeah, a lot of it's implied. You know, there's not kind of blood and gore everywhere, so I wouldn't be put off by that. It's just that, as Rachel says, it's quite a grim story, but it's told in quite a compelling way, I think.
So Animal Kingdom screens here from tomorrow, Friday the 25th of February. All the times are on our website and book online, of course. Okay, it's time for our quickfire film round with my two guests. So we're going to start with the best gangster film. Rachel.
My choice is Sexy Beast. For anyone who hasn't seen it, that came out in 2000 and stars Ray Winston, Ben Kingsley, Amanda Redman, amongst others. And it's directed by Jonathan Glazer, who's got a history of commercial and music video directing. So he's worked with artists like Blur, Radiohead, Nick Cave, Massive Attack. And he also directed that amazing Sony Bravia advert where all the sprayed paint was exploded across that disused block of flats in Glasgow. I don't only think this is one of the best gangster films, I think it's one of the best British films in my opinion, and it often ranks high in a lot of film polls. Again, this is one that I would say is gruesome, not one for the faint-hearted, but it's definitely worth seeing, and you can get it really cheap online if you haven't seen it already.
Okay, Andy, your best gangster film.
Many people think, of course, the best gangster films come from Hollywood, but of course they don't, they come from Hong Kong. And my best Hong Kong gangster film is, well, I have two. Election, the Johnny Toe film, which played at Corner House, which I'm sure many of the people listening have seen, which is a fantastic kind of story of the triads and the taking over and secession of power. But I also like the Warcraft I, earlier gangster parody film, 100 Ways to Be Number One, which is much less well known, but if anyone's interested in a really, really good parody of a Hong Kong gangster film which spoofs Wong Kar Wai and lots of other Hong Kong mainstays, then that's one to check out, 100 Ways to Be Number One.
Phew, I thought Andy was going to say my favourite film then. My favourite gangster film is also from Hong Kong. It's Infernal Affairs. Tony Leung and Andy Lau in a really exciting game of cat and mouse. One is the mole in the triads, one is the mole in the police. Who's going to find each other first? And it was remade by Scorsese as The Departed, but the original is fantastic. It's so tense. And again, two of my favourite actors in the world. And somewhere I actually have a signed poster by Tony Leung. Okay, next quickfire one. With a note to my references to Bellatar last week, thank you to the Bellatar fan club, all three of you that wrote in about that. So I'd like to do a bit of a homage to Bellatar and also to Memento Park, which is our new commission by Carey Young in Gallery 3 at the moment. So, best Hungarian film, Rachel.
Okay, my choice is Catalin Varga, which is a Hungarian co-production with the UK and Romania, but it featured, not last year, but the year before, as part of Abandon Normal Devices Festival in Liverpool. And it's about a young woman who lives in a remote village with a small son, and her husband is really angry about something, but it's never made clear what it is exactly, but basically threatens to leave her and take their son with him. But then she goes off on a quest to track down the men who've sort of wronged her in the past. It's never really revealed what, but you sort of assume that it's abuse because she can't have children. It's directed by British director Peter Strickland, and it's really, again, understated, typically art house, but it's a really intricate screenplay that thrives on not letting us see around the next corner until the very last minute. Intense watch, but definitely worth looking at.
My favourite Hungarian film is Control, spelt with a K, from 2003. It's a comedy drama about the people that work as the ticket collectors in the underground in Budapest. And it's very, very thrilling. It's about how they play games with each other, with the clients, if you like. It's not that you would think Ticket Inspectors makes a great film, but it does. Andy?
Again, going back a little bit further, one of the best-known Hungarian films, I think, on the art house circuit was Mephisto, the István Csábor film, with Klaus Brandenhauer performing an amazing role as the central character. But giving a kind of thematic through today, maybe I'll offer up Children of Glory, the 2006 film about the Hungarian water polo team that was written by Joe Esterhaus, the great, well, maybe not so great, Hollywood screenwriter, but which, and here's the link, folks, is set mostly during the Melbourne Olympics of 1956, when the Hungarian water polo team in a legendary game are playing the Soviet Union at the same time as the Soviet Union has sent the tanks into Budapest to put down the uprising. So on a Melbourne theme and on a Hungarian theme, I would say Children of Glory, just for today.
Okay, and no need to explain these films. Give me your favourite Guy Pearce film. Andy?
The Hurt Locker.
Mine is going to be Memento. Rachel?
The Road.
Okay, thank you all. Now they're going to stay with me for a little bit of film news, and I want their opinions on an article that was on the front cover of this Sunday's The Sunday Times. The article was all about Hollywood not making intelligent films anymore. So they said basically Hollywood is just making films for kids and big, stupid blockbusters that are going to make lots of money. Now, is this a problem? I'm not sure. There's two sides, I think, possibly to this story. One, we don't show that many Hollywood films. Maybe it doesn't matter to us. We've got lots of products from around the world. But the other side is, if cinema going doesn't become very popular and adults and older people stop going, what might that mean for us? Andy, what do you think?
It always makes me kind of laugh a little bit, this sort of blanket statement, because if you think back to the 70s, where the early 1970s, when everyone said, oh, Hollywood was making all these amazing films, you know, directors like Arthur Penn making Little Big Man, Scorsese starting with Mean Streets and then making Taxi Driver, Francis Coppola doing The Godfather, and everyone always refers back to that. But I always say, when people say that, well, that's also the Hollywood that was making Love Story, that was making The Towering Inferno, The Poseidon Adventure. So in a sense, I think Hollywood has always made these kind of big box office blockbusters. In a sense, that's what Hollywood is about. They're not going to stop doing that. But I think there is always, alongside that, some more intelligent Hollywood films. Now, when you say a more intelligent Hollywood film, I don't think we're saying it's going to be like a small independent American film, and we're not going to say it's going to be like a European art movie. It's going to be an intelligently put together Hollywood film. And I would say alongside the kind of Transformers and all of those sorts of things that we've got at the moment, we've got things like State of Play with Russell Crowe, which I thought was a really interesting, intelligent Hollywood film.
But in fact, the author of the article states that as an example of a bad case.
Well, he doesn't know what he's talking about then. Who was it? Give me his name. And then I would also say something like Green Zone is also another example of an intelligent Hollywood film. I mean, like I say, it depends what you mean by an intelligent Hollywood film.
I mean, that was another example by the author of the article. But just as in a film that doesn't make money, he wasn't saying they were particularly bad films, so I think he was in the case
of State of Play. So he wants intelligent Hollywood films to make money?
Yes.
Well, a lot of the big films that we talk about now, I mean, Taxi Driver wasn't an amazingly successful box office film when it came out. Mm-hmm. People forget that Raging Bull wasn't successful at the box office. Some of the films that people look back on now didn't make a lot of money. You know, Arthur Penn's Night Moves, one of the greatest Hollywood films of the 1970s, didn't make much money at all. The films that made money were your Towering Infernos, your Poseidon Adventure, your Earthquake, the films that have always made money. I'm going to have this fella's name.
it's also about older people going to the cinema. Rachel, what do you think about this?
We can look at our audience research from last year, and our audiences are typically older. So I think people are still coming to the cinema. It's just they're being a lot more selective about what they do go and see. And like Andy was saying, there's not always just Black Swan and then the latest Pixar. And Pixar are really good, but I mean, if they're talking about films that are coming out that are aimed at kids and they're the ones that aren't intelligent, then it's sort of getting into muddy waters, because in the same breath they're saying that Toy Story 3 is credible and is one of the best films from last year. So there's never anything that you can strictly say, this is good, this isn't. And I think it's always going to come up at this time of year, around the awards season. Everything that's out at the moment are amazing films, and everything that's been out since the 1st of January has been a great film. But it swings and roundabouts, and you go throughout the year, it's seasonal. Things come out in the summer that are aimed at kids, typically because it is the summer holidays. So I think they're just fondly looking back on the past 6 weeks and then looking back at last year when there wasn't so many great Hollywood films. But yeah, I think older audiences are our core audience here at Corner House, and we do rely on them coming to see films in our cinemas. So without them, we wouldn't be here.
And by older, we definitely just mean adult, by the way.
Yeah.
Also, it's a bit of a dig at the kind of state of the multiplexes, in a sense. So I think, again, Corner House is different. We've got this different atmosphere. You can come and do other things. You can come up and visit the art galleries. So I think it's a sort of different kettle of fish, if you like. If you're not so keen on the multiplexes because they're full of 3D, popcorn, and just ruly youngsters out having some fun, then do come along to Corner House instead. And speaking on that issue, Rachel, you found some interesting film news as well this week.
Yeah, something that's been going around the office this week, and it's an article that was spotted online just over the weekend, where in Latvia, a young guy waited until the end after he'd watched Black Swan the whole way through, sitting next to a guy rustling his popcorn, as you do, and as soon as the credits start rolling, stood up and shot him dead, and then waited to be arrested. So yeah, don't get too angry, guys. I was actually speaking to one of our rushers, and they said they can slightly empathise if there's someone there eating their food just that little bit too loudly, but that is just taking it a little bit to the extreme, I think.
Okay, so it's do be considerate and come watch films in a lovely environment like Corner House. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Rachel.
Art, film, books, food, drink. All at Corner House, Manchester.
Now, you'll remember last week we heard from Tom, Clara and Josh of the Archipelago Group about their Consulate of Corner House project, a Corner House micro commission, which is currently at the Triangle Shopping Centre. The launch was on Friday. It went really well. It's an amazing off-site artist project. It really captures the spirit of the best kind of participatory art projects, whilst also playing a little bit with the notion of Corner House as a brand, or indeed a territory. If you go into the director's office that's been built there, do have a look at the bookshelf. It's got an amazing set, a kind of fictitious library, if you like, of self-help books for the arts manager. I particularly love the title Tuesdays with Vasey, and you'll know exactly what I mean if you're in that kind of arts manager's job. Part of the project involves Corner House staff getting their faces cast, and they will be displayed on the bar at Corner House. But it's also a bit of a harking back, I think, to when you go into a consulate and you see the figures that are involved in the country and the governments of those. And my face cast was actually a bit like a cold spa treatment, but I think it's left me maybe looking a bit younger as well. And it wasn't just me getting my face cast. Let's hear from some of the others in our team who took to the hot seat.
I'm Sarah, the digital content producer here at Corner House. The whole face casting experience was a little bit weird, kind of like getting a toothpaste facial, sticking your head in a chewing gum, really fresh, really cold, and was a little bit panicky at the start when they started to put the alginate over my kind of nose and mouth and stuff. But after that, it was absolutely fine. You kind of relaxed into it and just sat back in the very comfortable chair. It was definitely one of the weirdest things I've done since working at Corner House, but yeah, I quite enjoyed it.
I'm Dan, I work in the box office here at Corner House. It's quite interesting when you just plunged into absolute darkness for 20 minutes, and it's weird because it gives you a real sense of there's something going on out there that I don't know what it is at the moment. And then when the like cast comes off, you're then plunged into this bright light. Quite an interesting experience. It was strange to like see your face but not your face, and I'm actually really interested to see the finished model because that's not going to have my beard on it, and I don't think I'd recognise myself without my beard.
I'm Isabel, I'm a creative industries producer here at Corner House. So I had my face cast last week at the Triangle in the most comfortable chair in the world. It made me realise I found it extremely hard to spend 15 minutes without being able to speak, and my face was cold for around 20 minutes afterwards. But I'm not sure if I'm looking forward to seeing my face displayed in the bar, but we shall see that next week.
Hiya, I'm Thomas, Exhibitions Coordinator at Corner House. I wasn't really very nervous about it beforehand, but when it happened, I was quite anxious. And then when the alginate went on, it's really sort of heavy, muddy, dense, gooey mixture, which feels quite cold and unusual. So it takes a few minutes to get used to, but then you just relax, and after about 15 to 20 minutes, when they peel it off again, which is actually quite hard because it feels like it's stuck on fast, and then you have to sort of coax it off little by little, it's a real release. It feels like being reborn. It's totally uplifting, and you feel cleansed and like a new man afterwards.
And I can confirm that is true. Thomas is a new man, and he's actually cleaned his desk. The Consulate of Corner House, a project by Archipelago, is exhibiting in the Triangle Shopping Centre, Exchange Square, until Sunday the 6th of March. And don't forget to look out for the Corner House face sculptures, which are going up in the bar today. You'll be able to see our ugly mugs on the wall until Wednesday the 9th of March. As always, the artwork is for sale.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Every week, one of the Corner House team gives us their recommendation of the week. Could be a film, event, exhibition, or something interesting that they've spotted here or outside of Corner House. This week, our young people's producer, Marisa Draper, tells us about a new local exhibition.
My recommendation this week is a show that's just opened at the Chinese Arts Centre called Human Error. It's on until the 30th of April, and it's a really great and quite different show for them. It's a newly commissioned exhibition by London-based design collective Household and Dario Utreiros. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. But yeah, I went to the preview last Friday. There's some really fantastic work there. It generally explores the relationship between machines and their users and highlights, I guess, the relevance of machines in our kind of contemporary society. It generally focuses on, I'd say, machines of, say, mass production, like printers and scanners and stuff, except they're very large sculptures that actually invite people to come in and interact with them. So, for example, there's a really nice piece that's like a photocopier, but a person actually lies inside the photocopier and has to draw somebody as they kind of get moved through this machine. So it relies a lot on drawing, and it's quite fun. You need to go really with someone else or be open to working with people in the gallery. Apparently they do have a week of demonstrations led by the artist, so that's probably worth going down to. But I think compared to a lot of exhibitions that they have at Chinese Arts Centre, it's something really different, something I've not really seen there before, so definitely worth checking out. And I recommend you'll probably enjoy it.
Thank you, Marisa. I do urge you all to get down to the Chinese Arts Centre. It's a really good exhibition. And don't forget, while you're there, pop to our consulate at the Triangle nearby afterwards. Now it's time for our What's On Guide. It's your last chance to see The People You're Not in Gallery 1. This exhibition was produced by members of the public and young people in response to the unrealised artists' ideas of Edward Barton, Norman Klatcher and Harry Hill. Yes, that Harry Hill. And this exhibition finishes on Sunday, the 27th of February at 6 p.m, so pop in before then. This Monday, the 28th of February, join us for a spotlight on Viva. Come along and listen to our programme manager, Rachel Haywood, talking about the Viva Spanish and Latin American Film Festival. And she's also going to look at Spanish language cinema in general and tell you about some of the directors and actors that are prominent and that you'll see in Viva. Ticket prices are £4 or £3, and you can book those online now. And finally, you can also book ahead if you want to know more about Alf Wren's Dangerous Ideas on Thursday the 10th of March. I'll be hosting this session with the internationally famous thinker, author and provocateur Alf Wren. And he argues that creative organisations and the way that they go about their work has degenerated into cosy, consensual conversations. So basically everyone just agreeing with each other and nothing really new coming out. And he says that we need to get out of our comfort zones. So Andy and Rachel, while you're still here, what do you think about his thesis? Rachel?
I have to say I disagree wholeheartedly. I suppose it's true of some organisations, but definitely not true of Corner House. I mean, all you have to do is come along to one of our film programme meetings once a month and there's no comfort zones there and everything is always pushing the boundaries. We're always looking to do something different, always thinking about new ideas, and no comfort zones here.
Andy, what do you think?
Well, I think the idea that we're in some kind of comfort zone, even just when we were talking about the fella who'd written that nonsense in the Times, shows that there's something that we're always sort of banging against and disagreeing with. And also, even the other week when I went to see Black Swan and we all sat down after, and there was about three or four different opinions around the table. Some people liked the film, some people really didn't like it, some people thought it was okay. So the idea that we're in some kind of comfort zone all the time, I think, is stretching a point a little bit. It'd be quite interesting to go along and see what Alf has to say.
So you can catch Alf Wren on Thursday the 10th of March at 6:30. Tickets are available online at the box office, and I promise it's set to be a lively and interesting event.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
Now, I have a theory that our annual Viva Festival signals the start of spring in our Republic of Mancunia. Honestly, the sun does come out every year at the same time, and everyone gets a feeling that they want to drink sangria and learn Spanish. We'll be talking more about Viva next week, but first up, here's our Viva programme assistant, Jessie Gibbs, with some highlights to look out for.
Hi, yeah, we're really looking forward to the festival starting next week. Friday is the opening night gala. Things are all going to plan for that, and the tickets are actually sold out at this stage, although there should be some returns if you keep your eyes peeled next week. It opens with this Mexican period drama, which is a really wonderful film, called Arráncame la Vida, Tear This Heart Out. And there will be another opportunity to see later in the festival, and it's actually the subject of the adult education morning as well, so if you want to get a bit more involved in discussing the film, it's a perfect opportunity. Over the opening weekend, we've also got a really good Spanish comedy called Gordos, Fat People, which is really funny. And our first guest of the festival as well will be there on Sunday night with El Asaltante, the mugger. He's flown over from Argentina thanks to the Cervantes Institute. Unfortunately, we have lost one of the films from the festival. La Pantera Negra is no longer featuring, but we've managed to pull some strings and replace it with an excellent documentary that's literally just had its world premiere last week at the Berlin Film Festival. That's Escuchando al Juez Garzón by Spanish director Isabel Coixet. And it's a documentary about the judge who prosecuted Pinochet. So that should be really interesting. And we're going to have an introduction and Q&A session about that as well. As well as the, obviously, all these films that we've got to watch, there are a couple of opportunities to come and have a chat and share your opinions about things. The first one is, in fact, the Sunday of the opening weekend, which will be the Catalan chat, and it follows on directly from the screening of Elisa K in Catalan. And later on, there'll be an opportunity to discuss other films in Spanish as well, in Castellano. Just a get-together in the Corner House Cafe upstairs. You don't need to book a ticket, you just turn up and share your opinions, basically. Obviously, you need a certain language level to participate, but basically everybody's welcome. Friday is the opening night for the films. It's also the opening night of the exhibition, which we've got running alongside, which is Oscar Muñoz, who's a Colombian artist. And if you'd like to find out more about his show, there'll be a couple of gallery discussions in the first week, one in English and one in Spanish. So, yeah, we've got a really great programme this year. We're really looking forward to everything starting, and we hope to see you there. You can find out full details of all the events and films on the Corner House website or on the Viva website, which is www.vivafilmfestival.com.
Thanks, Jessie. Viva Spanish and Latin American Film Festival takes place here at Corner House from the 5th to the 27th of March, and you can book online now for everything. And as always, there is no booking fee for booking online. That brings me to the end of this week's podcast. Thanks for listening to me, Sarah Perks, and I'd also like to thank all of my guests and everyone that's contributed to this week's podcast. For more information on everything that we've talked about, do visit our website, www.cornerhouse.org. Alternatively, you can follow us on Twitter using @cornerhousemcr, join the Cornerhouse Facebook group, or check out our blog on Posterous. Join us next week for another action-packed edition. We'll be discussing the big winners at the Oscars, and we'll be going into lots of detail about Viva Spanish and Latin American Film Festival. Adios.
You've been listening to the Cornerhouse podcast.